Welcome to another episode of the In Your Field podcast. Now, today we are actually on location with Farmer Barnes Dairy and Jane Barnes, where we'll be talking everything from milk, diversification, and even celebrity chefs. So, Jane, hello. And
hello.
Welcome to the In Your Field podcast. Delighted to be here at Farmer Barnes Dairy, and also amazing to actually be on location. We seem to have all been locked in for a little while. So I suppose the most appropriate place to start is where are we, which is Summerby. And tell us a little bit about Farmer Barnes Dairy, what's surrounding us.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's great to have you here, Gemma. Thank you for coming. Farmer Barnes Dairy, I set up about 4 or 5 years ago now, following many years of people asking me, can they come and visit the farm? And I decided to take advantage of the fact that we built a brand new dairy farm in 2018. And I commandeered this space within the building itself, specifically to host visitors to watch and learn about dairy, milk and cows. So it became Farmer Barnes Dairy. Our surname's Barnes, so that fitted in, and it's hopefully it falls off the tongue and people remember it. But yeah, it's a bit of a different type of diversification on a dairy farm.
Yeah, so, I mean, for those that are watching on video, they'll be able to see some of what's surrounding us. But for those that are listening, I mean, in here is just an amazing space. I mean, you've got a kitchen area, but then we've also got, was it Charlotte?
Charlotte the cow, yes. I have a resident cow in my classroom. I actually call it the cow classroom.
Yeah.
Because there's viewing windows straight onto the milking parlour, which is 2448 herringbone milking parlour. So it's about 75 foot long. So this room is directly parallel to that. And during milking times, people can sit in comfort in my cow classroom, have a cup of tea and watch the cows through the window being milked, coming and going. So that's why.
I suppose the obvious question is that with dairy and with dairy farmers, not everybody wants to open their doors, do they, in dairy?
No.
So what is it about you and the situation here that wanted you to open the doors to people to come here and experience
it? Well, it's been 20 years that I've been a guest speaker for the WI organisation in the UK. And I can't believe how quickly those 20 years have gone. And each year I think, I won't get any bookings, but I do. And the personal recommendation keeps coming through. So people are really interested where their food comes from. And they want to know how we milk a cow in the 21st century. So when we decided to relocate the farm buildings from the old village farm site and put up a modern day unit, mainly for our son's future, Harry, and I asked my own son, could I have a space specifically to have the visitors and to be a safe space away from the comings and goings of the farm around us? So that's how I got this. And I know there's a market out there for people wanting to visit.
Yeah.
So I was very confident about having this area allocated to me. So I had to fund it. Obviously, it's nothing to do with the farm, although the farm's the attraction. But yeah, we are very lucky that we've got a brand new 21st century, I call it a 5-star cow palace. It's all built specifically for the dairy producing milk from our cows.
So how many cows are there here at the moment?
We have 216 total,
right,
in milking herd. We are an outdoor grazing system. We have a mixture of Ayrshires and Frisians, and we're just starting to crossbreed the two breeds. All our milk is on a solids contract for a local cheese producer, which we're very proud of. And we have a lot of rolling hills. We're quite high above sea level here, Gemma. Mm. It's 650 feet above sea level. So we're on top of a hill. We do get a lot of wind.
And snow.
And snow and rain. And it's quite cold at the moment. Mm. But the cows are hardy and they're out 24/7 for 9 months of the year. Mm. And then they're just inside for the winter months. But we produce the right sort of milk to go into cheese from grazed grass predominantly. It's a low-cost system, and our cows seem to suit it. And then we keep all the young stock as well. So we've got 150 heifers from newborn to two-year-olds on the farm as well. So there's about 400 animals.
And so for those that don't know, dairy is generally an early start.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. However, I have never, ever milked a cow. And people are quite shocked at that. I have never needed to or wanted to, I suppose. There's plenty of jobs that I have a better skill set for, Gemma, than milking in a milking machine. No, the new milking parlour is made the job a lot easier. It's one of the easier jobs on the farm. It isn't so time consuming or laborious now. So one man milks in our milking parlour the 250 odd cows in 2 hours, no problem.
Yeah.
So yeah, we start at 5:30 in the morning. By 8 o'clock, the finished milking, the washing down, and then we start again at 3:30 in the afternoon.
Yeah, I mean, I think we were talking, weren't we, a little bit about how people still think, you know, sitting on an upturned bucket milking the cows, and it's just really not like that, is it?
It irritates me that people's memories of milking a cow is always by hand, always. When I ask visitors or people, when I'm talking to them, I say, has anyone milked a cow? And a hand will go up and recall some sort of milking by hand, which is fine. But I want to dispel those myths, because I don't know anybody that milks a cow by hand commercially, maybe as a pet cow, yes, but not commercially. So yes, it's much more time efficient and better for the cows really to get done every day.
So what can you experience? You come here, so people would find you via your website, via your social media.
Yeah, social media has played a huge part. I went on a social media course last September time, and that gave me much more confidence. Although I'd had a presence as Farmer Barnes Dairy on Facebook and Instagram, I hadn't really used it to its full potential. So another farmer's daughter, dairy farmer's daughter I knew, same age as my daughter, she runs a comms business, so to do with rural businesses. So I joined her online course over 6 weeks, and that gave me lots of insight and confidence to carry on with social media. So yeah, I started doing family groups on a Saturday afternoon when lockdown allowed last August through to end of October. So every Saturday I had small groups of families, so up to 15 adults I'm allowed, and then all the children. And they come especially to watch the cows being milked, so it's always an afternoon visit. Mm. We take them for a tractor and trailer ride across the fields, which everybody enjoys. Then we go and see the calves and stroke them or bed them down with straw, and the kids play in the bales. Then we get some milk and we start feeding the calves, and they understand about how we feed them. We watch the cows being milked through the milking parlour, and we've got a viewing platform upstairs. So we're looking over the top of this amazing sight of 200 cows, all red and white and black and white mixtures, which looks really pretty, colour scheme. And then we see them filing in single file into the milking parlour, and then we can see from above whoever's milking, my son usually, putting the units on, and then the machine takes the unit off after 5 or 6, 7 minutes when the cow's given all her milk. So there's a great deal they learn just by watching.
And what is that gap like? Because, you know, you think of people that come here, I mean, in terms of knowledge, is there generally any knowledge of how it all works, or are they generally, because it always fascinates me in terms of, you know, you'll meet some that have a bit of an idea when it comes to, I mean, we've spoken on the podcast about meat and all that kind of that side of things. But when it comes to how little do they know sometimes?
It's enormous gap, to be honest. I've had grannies on the, you know, not understanding at all where their milk comes from and ask me quite simple questions. But I try not to be any sort of condescending. You know, I take it that they've come here to learn. And if they're learning by asking questions or learning by watching, that's fine by me. And I'm very straightforward. So if they ask me a question, I answer it straightforward and as plainly and that they can understand and take in. The children, obviously, they're a bit different. I have to talk at different level to them, but I still get the message across. They still understand. And again, they learn from seeing and watching, aren't they? They're like sponges. So
that is that supermarket gap, isn't it?
It really is.
It's just, you know,
enormous.
the availability of milk, you know, yeah. whether or not you're going to your local supermarket or corner shop,
yeah.
because it's straight out of the chill cabinet home and into the fridge.
Really
and
understanding. Yeah. I give lots of talks to adults in the WI world still, latterly on Zoom, and they, by the end of my hour of explaining what happens on a farm and how it works, how to produce milk, they really begin to value that milk they've got in the fridge at home. Mm. I think people have discarded milk as a bit of a, you know, they take it for granted, don't they? Mm. They know they can get milk any day of the week, any supermarket, any shop.
I mean, I've still got friends now that, you know, I've got milk in the fridge. It's a couple of days apparently past its date on the bottle, and I'll drink it and say, oh, no, you know, everything is all, you know, it's gone past the date. It's like, it's absolutely fine. You know, they all recoil in horror.
I know. It's hard. I mean, I had a question yesterday in my conversation asking me if I drank our own milk. She didn't know how to phrase it, and so I had to help her out. It's called raw milk. It's not pasteurized. It's cooled, because milk comes out body temperature. So we cool it on farm, and then it's unpasteurized when it leaves the farm to go to the factory to be made into the cheese. So we take a jug a day out of the tank, which is cooled milk, but nothing else is done to it. And I'm a dairy farmer's daughter, so I've been brought up on this milk for the, you know, 50-odd years I've been on this earth.
Yeah.
And I've still got a mother-in-law that's with us, living in the cottage at home next door to us. And she's 93, born in Devon, reared on single cream on her cornflakes. And she's 93. So, you know, the myth about the goodness of cow's milk is, you know, whole cow's milk is the phrase I like to use and try to educate people, because the phrase full fat cream milk is really irritating, extremely irritating, because all milk straight from a cow in any part of the world, in any breed, is generally 96% fat free.
Yeah, which is just amazing, isn't it? Because we were talking about how when you make the decision to buy your milk, you know, you've got your blue top, your green top, your red top, and then obviously other sort of the more expensive varieties of Jersey milk and all that kind of other stuff that you find on the shelf. Mm. Yet generally, you will speak to it and they're guided by the colour of the top according to the fat content.
Yes. Yes.
Which is a bit of a myth, isn't it, really?
It's hugely worrying, because I don't buy milk, but I have seen cartons and they do say whole milk. I don't know any brand of milk that says full fat or full cream milk. It doesn't say that on the label. It says whole milk. And we're pretty good in this country. Our labelling laws, they have to write on the box or on the cover what it actually is inside the product. So everyone calls it whole milk in the labelling world, so why can't the general public or the TV chefs and celebrities call it whole milk? It's wholesome. It's whole. It's like whole grain and whole wheat and whole meal. It's nothing added, nothing taken out. So that's the blue label. All it's done is pasteurised and homogenised to stop the cream settling. So that's the only thing's happened on that. Now, 2/3 of all milk sold every day is semi-skimmed, and that's just a huge PR stunt that 2/3 of milk every day is semi-skim milk, because there's no such thing, Gemma, as a semi-skim cow.
No, absolutely.
You do not get semi-skim milk straight from a cow, okay? No. It's 2% or less butterfat. And the idea is that the processor has removed the fat, put in the 2% or less to call it semi-skimmed, and what they've held back is cream. And that cream is a value, and it's a huge value to the processor. Mm. So there's three parts to the dairy industry. There's the producer, that's us, there's the processor, and then there's the retailer.
Mm.
And there's no way around it. We all need to make a profit.
Mm.
And so I can tell you now who makes the least profit out of that litre of milk.
and who would that be?
Somebody very close to home. Yes, us. The supermarket, the processor, obviously, that's a big industry, and they've got their own, you know, regulations, and obviously a big investment to process a lot of milk. So they can see where they need their profits to keep their plants going. But the retailer, and I'm talking about all the major outlets, including supermarkets, they have the least cost in selling that milk, because the milk already comes ready bottled, doesn't it? And they just pay someone to put it on the shelves or wheel that crate into the supermarket cooler cabinet or whatever. So they have the least, but they make the most profit, I believe.
Yeah.
I believe.
Well, I mean, one of the things that I'm actually picked up on your website is, you know, why are dairy farmers leaving the industry? And in 2019, there was 8,500 dairy farmers in England and Wales, compared to 76,000 in the 1960s.
Is that
a consequence of what we're talking about?
It's probably a combination, but Farmers Weekly did a survey quite a few years ago now, so probably I need updating, but I do remember reading it, and the most common reason for a dairy farmer to retire from milking and giving up their herd of cows was lack of succession.
Right, okay, so it's just
that was the first major reason. Mm. Obviously, beyond that would be investment, lack of money to invest and improve their facilities. And I must admit, my husband and I are in our mid to late 50s. And if it wasn't for our son, when at the age of 19, declaring he wanted to carry on dairy farming, we would not have built this place.
No.
We would have not built this new farm. No. This is for him, he's the fourth generation to milk on this farm. So we have got succession. So I like to introduce ourselves as a rare breed. I always say that I'm married to a rare breed, and then I'm a rare breed daughter, and I bred a rare breed, and I'm keeping the rare breed going. And people are thinking, what is she talking about? Mm. But I say the fact that today, to update you, Gemma, the latest figures for 2020 is 8,000 dairy farmers in the England and Wales providing all this milk, and we're self-sufficient in liquid milk and a lot of products. So the farmers that are left dairying have just got larger, and we're a pure example of that. 30 years ago when I met and married Mark, he had 60 cows, and that was enough income for two households, for his mum and dad and us. And for many years we stayed a sort of around about 100-120 size.
I mean, that succession thing, I think it's a story that seems to be playing out for us when we're in conversation with a lot of businesses, because I mean, even from my own family, it was with all the opportunity that was surrounded with universities, with, you know, you want to, you don't want to be doing this all your life, you don't want to, you know, you want to get out there and you know, go and seize any opportunity. And I think it's almost that's been the victim, really, has been that the son's, you're very lucky that he at that age just put up his hand and said, actually mum and dad, I want to stay.
Well, I think his personal story was, at the age of 13 we sent him to boarding school in Somerset, which is like 3 hours away. But it was a school Mark had gone to himself in the 70s, and it was a specific school with a farm attached, boys only, quite small, and a lot of attention per child. So he absolutely thrived down there. So he had 3 years down there. He did come home now and again. I did have him back for Christmas and things like that.
You did
that.
Allow him to come back.
Just leave him down there for 3 years. Anyway, he got to 16. They got him through his GCSEs, and he got through into a college in Cheshire, because obviously we wanted to send him to he wanted to go to an agricultural college where cows were involved, and locally that wasn't an option. So he obviously sort of kept away again for another 3 years, having had middle year on two other dairy farms in the UK. And they were the most valuable years that he could have spent, because he has experience on somebody else's farms and got ideas.
It's that opportunity and education.
Opportunity. But he decided then, when he left school, he realised how lucky he was going to be. He'd got a farm coming to him. I do have a daughter as well, and she has declared she didn't want anything to do with the farm in her future life. So we have two children. Yes, she's very lucky he's got the farm coming his way. So I think that's when he began to appreciate cows, because up until that point, all he wanted was John Deere tractors. So when he went to school, he realised all his friends at school who didn't come from a direct farming background would never be able to have their own farm, because the opportunities to start up are very few and far between nowadays.
So in terms of education, it's vital, isn't it? In terms of the aspirations and changing the perception of what you can achieve,
you're right, because at college it became cool to be a dairy farmer.
Absolutely.
It was cool. Instead of, my dad milks cows every day. You know, when he got to college, he'd absolutely met other keen dairy farmers' sons at the same age, and it all just made it better for him.
I mean, I suppose if I had one regret in life, but it's not really a regret, it's just a lack of knowledge, was that my parents didn't know things like HARPA and RAU existed. So I went down the traditional route to become a surveyor, and then met my other half, who I'm still with today, who was very much entrenched in rural, because to me, rural wasn't cool.
No.
Now, looking back, I wish I had have gone to the likes of those universities, because to be honest, I'd have probably enjoyed it a little bit more. Became a land agent. But, you know, the reality is I didn't get to live that kind of life through uni. So it's all about the opportunities that you can put in front of young people.
Absolutely. And when Mark and I were younger, going to university was for the elite in our school days, I'm afraid. I'm sorry, but I was never bright enough to get to any sort of aspiration to go to any sort of uni. So that was a real, not a no-no, but I just did a secretarial course because I'm the eldest of three daughters and my dad was a dairy farmer and he didn't really want his daughters working on the farm. And yet all through my school life, I was helping my dad morning and night, and I'm the one that could drive a tractor at the age of 10, and I was the outdoor tomboy girl, and I didn't know anything about cooking and food and stuff until I left home. So my dad, and I'm still really close to my dad, he's now retired from dairy farming, but he still has a huge interest and he's awfully proud of what we've done here and what's lined up for my son.
I mean, I do get a bit of a sense through chatting that It's diversification, but it's also linked in a little bit with a philanthropic type, you know, want and desire to educate as well. I mean, obviously Farmer Barnsdale is a business in its own right.
Yeah,
here, but
this is my sideline.
It seems to
really
be a passion there.
Oh, it's a huge passion.
Educating.
Gemma. Thank you. Yeah, I give talks a lot, and the vote of thanks every time is your enthusiasm, your dedication, your positiveness. You know, what comes through just with me chatting is amazing, and it's me natural. This is me how I am. I'm very a glass half full type of person, and to be in this industry, it helps to be positive.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, just on that, in terms of how, because you look at the media, you hear the stories in the media, and it's always a pretty much a doom and gloom picture about dairy.
Oh, don't the media like a drama?
And
yes.
Is there a true case for why people feel particularly hard done by in dairy? What do we need to know if we're not in dairy?
Oh, gosh.
About, if you could, I know that's probably a podcast on its own.
It is. I could spend hours on this one, Gemma. But to be honest, it all nails down to education. We're back to education again. And this is why I'm passionate about sharing our experience and opening our farm doors and our farm gate to let the general public in here who know very little, to make that connection, to make that leap between consumer and the producer.
Yeah.
And I think, although there's many popular TV shows on the telly these days, rural-based, and we've seen a lot of Kate Humble,
Are they really rural-based?
And I'm thinking,
we're allowed to controversially say that.
I think a lot of them aren't earning their main income from these so-called farms, are they?
No, I mean, I think that's the problem at the moment with the media, isn't it? Is that, you know, they're on TV as rural programmes, but fundamentally, most of us out here in the rural landscape and running rural businesses are angrier by the week as to how they're portrayed.
Because the personality farmers are earning their money from the media that they're sharing rather than from the farming, half of them. And it's scary that... And I, as a part of me, Gemma, I'd love to be doing that as well. Yeah, can't I write a book or have another income stream?
I mean, I have to say, there is one particular lady that deals with sheep up in Yorkshire that, you know, whilst the character doesn't necessarily bode that well with the rural community at times, has at least portrayed a realistic picture. In terms of the life death cycle, the education of the youngsters. But that seems to, you know, that they don't want to talk about the bad stuff.
That's hard,
and the darker areas. Yes. You know, I grew up in, in a family whereby I wouldn't think anything of plucking and going out and plucking my dinner and, you know, breasting it and taking it into the kitchen to my mum. That was normal. But yet my friends would sit there recoil in horror. So there is that. I think they do need to strike a better balance. I think it's great we've got some of the programs out there, but there's definitely a better balance to be had.
Yes, it does help. I must admit, any sort of publicity is hopefully good publicity for the rural agricultural industry, whatever part of it that farmers are doing. I mean, I could go on forever, but you know, if Brexit did have, I was hoping we'd have tariffs.
Gosh, that's another podcast,
yes, I know,
isn't it?
I'm sorry, but if we'd have had
Brexit,
if we'd have had tariffs on the imported, in our world, it's cheese. So if we'd had imported tariffs, would help the sales of British cheese, because we're very good at producing British cheese in this country, very regional, very yummy. And why is our cheese on the supermarket shelf amongst the French and the Danish and the Dutch cheeses?
Yeah, I know, absolutely.
I'm horrified that our country is very happy to import all this foreign milk in the form of product when we've got such a lot of range myself. So another one of my soapbox little
go on then, go
chatters,
for it, go for it. You can go
when I'm
because
presenting.
We've got a game of true and false after
oh,
this.
Oh, have we? Yeah. Heavens. Yeah. One of my soapboxes is to say for the consumer and my audiences when I speak on Zoom to them is please look at what you're putting in your supermarket trolley every week. Please vote with your purse. You know, if you want to support British farming, and I'm not just sticking to dairy here, it's any British produce, especially potatoes, all our own meats, you know, just pick it up and look for the label that says where it's come from.
Yeah.
See if it's got the red tractor or a union flag or something to say that this is you're supporting a British farmer here.
Yeah.
Because there's only 8,000 dairy farmers supplying all the milk that everybody needs in this country every day. And the dairy farms that are left, and it's still dropping, Gemma, a dairy farmer a day is giving up, and that trend hasn't dropped, has changed for many years. So the farmers that are left, like us, have quadrupled in size. We've quadrupled our numbers in the last 5 years to what we were because it's economic of scale, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, you'll have to go and have a look on some of my social media as a post I did about a certain month in January that got labelled for a certain body of people that manage their diet. And I actually added up the air miles of my basket versus theirs. And it's quite interesting to give it a go.
Yes.
So a little bit of before we close about true and false, and this is all about milk. So I looked up some common milk myths because I thought this would be quite a fun way of finding out how much people actually know about dairy and what they're putting in the basket. So the first one, regular milk is not as healthy as organic regular milk.
Right, well, I'm sorry, but it's all exactly the same. There's no difference. The word organic is the only difference in that sentence between the two statements. The word organic means, on a dairy farm, means that you have to, you can't use artificial fertilizer on the fields to grow the grass for the cows to eat, but you can use manure, which is a natural fertilizer, obviously. So you can't use certain amount of antibiotics when a cow's poorly, which slightly worries me because when anybody's ill, you want them to get better. And farmers love their animals, you know, we want them to be healthy and happy to provide the milk for us. So there's a certain cap on any sort of medicines they can have, I believe. And the other thing is the cow cake, which is the food they get when they're being milked, has to come from an organic source. And that's the expensive bit. It's probably four times dearer than the regular. So that's why it makes organic milk dearer.
So in terms of the vitamins and the minerals, it says here that that's completely false in terms of that statement because it's all the same.
It's all the same.
They've
got all the same. Yeah, nothing added, nothing taken out. It's just the way the cows are fed, really.
Okay.
The organic food the cows eat. And it takes a number of years to convert a cow to an organic status.
So what is the real benefit of being organic?
Well, it used to be a higher milk price per litre,
right.
Obviously to cover your costs. I do know that our cheese factory did have a go at making organic their cheese, but organically, and had a number of farmers change for that. But there was no demand at the end of the day to buy that cheese when it's so much more expensive than the regular. Mm.
So another one, only whole milk contains vitamin D.
Well, that's a false, terrible statement.
We'll just leave that one there. Yes. We don't need any further explanation as to that one. Now, this one I quite liked. So for the price, milk supplies more nutrients than juice.
What?
So that's apparently true. Right. So per 8-ounce glass, milk provides twice as many vitamins and nutrients as juice.
Oh, of course. Yeah, well, juice is full of sugar, isn't it? I think. Fruit and sugar, isn't it?
And the last one for us to finish on, especially given my comment earlier, I suppose. Soy, almond, coconut and rice beverages are healthier than real dairy milk.
Oh, no. That's cringeworthy, that is. How can anyone write that sentence? No, definitely not. Milk is a whole food, isn't it? It's not classed as a drink. It's classed as a whole food because it's got so many nutrients and goodies in there. And it's a very healthy product.
And, I mean, you touched on this very slightly, which was dairy cows are given unnecessary antibiotics, transferring antibiotics to the milk we drink.
No, that's not allowed at all. No. We do have poorly cows at times and we do treat them with antibiotics over a number of days. That is totally illegal to put that milk in our bulk tank for the dairy to take. They would refuse to take
tested,
the whole.
It's
tested every collection and they would refuse payment. We wouldn't get paid for it. So it's a real no-no. Yeah. So we separate that milk. We milk the cows separately and it goes into a different, it's called a dump bucket. So it's not a very exciting word, but that's what we call dump milk. And I use that to feed the calves. So we don't actually throw it away because it's still got a value. And the calves, I've got a number of beef calves. So I use that to feed them twice a day. So,
because some of your the calves, some of them will obviously stay for milking, but then others would go into meat.
Well, generally, the milk industry means that the cow has to go through the process of giving birth to produce milk.
It's once a year, is it?
Cows are exactly the same as us, Gemma. Yeah. They're pregnant for 9 months, they give birth, they produce colostrum. Now, colostrum, again, is not the sort of milk that you put in the tank. The dairy doesn't want that type. It's a very thick, creamy, yellowy type milk and it's perfect for the newborn calf, and they need to ingest at least in the first 6 hours 6 pints or equivalent in liters, but they really need to have enough in early life to give them an immune system and give them antibodies and nutrients to live and grow. So the cow on our farm, the calf stays with the mother for 48 hours to drink that colostrum, particularly from its own mother. Then we separate them. The calf comes into the shed where they, like a nursery with lots of others, and they go in pens of threes or fours. They're never on their own. They're always with their cohorts.
Yeah.
And then I feed them 2 litres in the morning, 2 in the afternoon, and that's enough for them to live and grow for 8 to 10 weeks. And then by then, they're sort of start to be weaned. So calves have all cows have three stomachs, but calves start with a large abomasum stomach, which is the milk stomach. And then over that first 3 months of life, that slowly reduces. And the rumen, where the solid food goes, that starts to increase. So we like the calves to nibble. Actually, it's barley straw they're nibbling. Right. So they have access to corn, water and straw after the first week of being on milk. First week of life.
Yeah.
So it's amazing how soon in a calf's life that they start nibbling solid food. I'm quite impressed. And that all helps to improve their health and growth rates. So the cow, we separate them because the cow is a dairy cow. And when she goes through the milking parlour, early lactation, she can produce between 25 and 30 litres a day, Gemma.
Wow.
A day.
So she's...
And the calf only needs four. So...
It's surplus anyway.
And people have to remember on this farm, the way we earn our money to pay our bills is by selling milk.
Yeah.
Not the calf. It's selling the milk that produces our money, our mainstream income. So we are perfecting the most economic, most efficient way of grazing our cows to fetch their own food, come back to the milking parlour, give their milk twice a day, at the right quality to go into a cheese product. And that's where the expertise is. And to do it all with a set price to get paid for your milk.
Yeah.
Because in the dairy industry, the market sets the price, not the farmer. So we have to cut costs to make a margin to stay in business.
Yeah.
And that's where we're going. We're going for this low cost system.
Yeah. Well, in terms of, I mean, just as a finisher, where do you, you know, what's next really? I mean, obviously you're going to be able to open up your doors a little bit more, but I suppose it's just continuing to spread that message really, isn't it?
I can't believe 20 years have gone by when I started all this. Isn't it funny? Because I mean, my kids were 6 and 4 when I started, and it's like all opportunities. I mean, I came from a young farmer background, so I didn't go to uni, but my husband and I met in Young Farmers, and we gained a lot of life skills without knowing it through those 10 years that we were members. I mean, I learned to public speak through Young Farmers. My husband learned to chair lots of really big meetings, and he's since been a county councillor and a borough councillor, and all those skills came into play, and he really enjoyed those years. So for me, my public speaking skills came from the Young Farmers organisation, and my confidence, and hopefully I'm talking, sharing not my knowledge, what I already know and what I've learned over the years as my role as a farmer's wife, and I still call myself a farmer's wife because it's a very manual job still, and I don't want to be a farmer. So I'm a farmer's wife and a farmer's mother. And yeah, so basically the future holds, there's still lots and lots of people want to eventually come to the farm and watch the cows being milked. And they love seeing the brown and white and black and white cows on the green fields. And today they're on the drive, aren't they? And you can see them as you arrive. So that's always a nice touch if they can see the cows before they get out of their vehicles and on the tour. We take them for a tractor and trailer ride, and they enjoy that very much. And the scenery around here is just amazing on a nice day.
Absolutely.
So they appreciate the countryside a little bit more, perhaps.
Yeah, thank you. Well, that's it for us today. I mean, I think it sounds like there's plenty more podcasts in there in terms of some of the content. But thanks for joining us and for taking the time to meet with us today.
It's my pleasure, Gemma. Thank you very much for inviting me.
Take care.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us for the In Your Field podcast. Now, make sure you don't miss an episode by subscribing either via Spotify, iTunes, or wherever you get your podcasts from.